Hello and welcome to At the Movies with Mike and Marie, a show where two film professors talk about movies. I'm Marie Westaver.
I'm Mike Giuliano.
And today we're going to talk about actor Meryl Streep, probably considered the best living actress in the world today. And when I was looking at her story, Mike, talk about a charmed life. You know, she graduated from high school, went to Vassar College, and then went to Yale School of Drama. Graduates a couple years later, has a huge breakout film role, and then just kind of never stops after that. And this is after, you know, in high school, she was a cheerleader. She was the homecoming queen. You know, I feel like she has, like I said, lived a charmed life, certainly in terms of what you hear other people struggling to do to get ahead with their career. Like a lot of other actors we've talked about on this show, she had a lot of stage work. When she was thinking about what to do with her life, though, she originally applied to law school, but slept in the morning of her interview and just took it as a sign that she was destined for other things. When she was at Yale Drama, fellow classmates included Sigourney Weaver. She and Sigourney Weaver appeared in a play staged in a swimming pool together called The Frogs. And as a young actress, she performed at the Yale Repertory Theater with Christopher Lloyd. We've talked about that many times, Mike, how, you know, not only is it your time, you're kind of stepping into almost what seems like fate, but so are a whole lot of other people who are also stepping into fate. Now, one thing people might not know is that, you know, at age 12, she studied to be an opera singer. She took serious singing lessons. This is what she thought she was going to do. Also has a photographic memory, which she says lets her memorize her lines after one reading. So all of these advantages all coming to, you know, to play with this one person. What do you want to say about Meryl Streep in terms of, you know, early promise, anything I've said about, you know, where she came from in terms of how she ended up where she is today?
Big question. There's so much to say about her, but you make a really good point about what we all consider a charmed life. And, you know, it's, it can be risky to call somebody the greatest living actor, whatever, but she's certainly on the short list of really great actors today. Just to run some of the numbers there, I mean, she's 72 now, but still a very active career. Also by way of numbers, and this is a charm number, she has won 3 Academy Awards, which ain't bad, right? But the really striking statistic there is that she has 21 Academy Award nominations. It's an all-time record. Even Katharine Hepburn would be impressed by that, right? You know, nobody comes close to her at this point. I feel like she wakes up in the morning and maybe one of her daughters calls and says, you know, Mom, what's new? And her mother might say, oh, well, I just got another Oscar nomination. And well, what else is new? You know, what's going on? You know, it's so routine in a way, but she's always so gracious about it. And they're so well-deserved. But Marie, just to reinforce a few of the points you're making, she really had a really great suburban childhood, if I can put it that way, in New Jersey, and, you know, very supportive parents. And one thing that strikes me in terms of her early schooling and training, it's not insignificant that early on she did some training as an aspiring opera singer. Now, on the one hand, that didn't pan out. And if you look at her early career, you know, really serious film roles and so on. But, you know, once you've done Sophie's Choice, do you want to do that every time out of the gate? I mean, you could have a nervous breakdown if you try to do that every time out of the gate. But the point I'd make there is that early musical training pays off later. The second half of her career has had more comedies and some musical roles. We'll talk about them as we get to them. But even playing Foster Jenkins, who was, you know, a would-be opera singer. And, you know, so she's had roles where she sings and plays rock music and all that. But we'll get to that in terms of later roles that play off of the early, the Florence Foster Jenkins, most obviously, but other roles where she, you know, has tapped into her musical abilities. But it's good to mention that right now, that it didn't go to waste at some later point. Yeah, she's singing opera and a lot of musical stuff and lighter stuff. But anyway, Marie, I wanted to reinforce some other points you were making. There's a kind of pipeline here, a creative pipeline. And she goes to Vassar and, you know, does a lot of theater acting and Yale School of Drama. And Marie, you mentioned some of the people she worked with, and it's such a pipeline. It's not that far. I've done it on Amtrak. It's not far from Yale to New York. And she does that. She goes to Yale School of Drama. She works at the Yale Repertory Theater, which is one of the best resident theater companies in the country. When she goes to New York, she's on Broadway before long. She gets an Oscar nomination for being in a Tennessee Williams play. But one thing I'd want to add to what we've said so far is that she also, starting in 1976, appears with the New York Shakespeare Festival. If you're not a New Yorker, it might just be a credit line, you know, like, okay, here's the resume, here's a line. But you know what? If you're in and around New York and you're a real theater maven, it's something, you know, Joe Papp and New York Public Theater, and particularly like Shakespeare in the Park, all that, that's a big deal. We could fill up today's show just mentioning the names of famous actors with really solid stage training like she has, who would do a lot of work there specifically. And you know what? It's all about networking. So she could have continued going on with just theater, and she's periodically returned to theater. But the thing is, it was a springboard. And by the late 1970s, her screen debut is just a bit part in Julia in 1977, but it's a prestige picture. And I think that takes us up really to Maria. I'll hand it back to you at this point. That period in the late 70s where she's playing supporting roles, but my goodness, she gets some great supporting roles and she gets noticed. So let me hand it back to you at this point.
You mentioned Katharine Hepburn. Now, according to Katharine Hepburn, Meryl Streep was her least favorite modern actress on screen. Click, 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 she said, referring to the wheels turning inside Streep's head. Now, I don't see that when I watch Meryl Streep act. Of course, I'm not Katharine Hepburn.
But you know what, Marie? I'm sorry to interrupt, but I can't hold back any longer. The thing is, Katharine Hepburn was known for acerbic remarks, so that's not unusual. She's not the only one who has said that about Meryl Streep. So lest we just become a chorus of fans here, just, you know, and I love Meryl Streep, so I'm not saying this personally, but what I'm saying is I've occasionally read comments along the lines of Katharine Hepburn's. There are some actors, and maybe it's professional jealousy, whatever, but there are also just some people by way of cultural commentary who felt that she's overrated or that they see her as being overly clinical. Maybe that's the word to use. She's renowned for her ability to mimic voices, to memorize things, to do accents. And sometimes people feel like as they're watching her, they see the wheels turning. That's what Katharine Hepburn meant by the click, click. It's like, okay, now you get my Polish accent. Now you get my German accent. Hitting the mark, hitting the button, doing it that way. And again, personally, I don't feel that way, but there have been times in some of her movies, maybe some of her lesser roles, where I felt like that she was doing that. Not automatic pilot, but just simply the mechanical quality of, you know, like, let's put it in terms of live theater. You're on a stage and you have tape marks on the floor. You're hitting your mark, right? Sometimes you'll watch a performance in live theater where you feel the actor is somewhat self-conscious, as in, I walk 10 feet over, I see the tape on the floor, I hit my mark, I square off, I deliver my lines, and quite beautifully, if I say so myself, I deliver my lines, bingo, I got it. That's a very subjective assessment sometimes. When does somebody like fully inhabit the role, and when is somebody in a very studious way doing the role extremely well? So I'm sorry for that long-winded interruption, but I think that's along the lines of what Katharine Hepburn was getting at. But goodness knows, people have also accused Katharine Hepburn of being somewhat affected on occasion too. So let me hand it back to you so you can complete the rest of your sentence, which I rudely interrupted.
Actually, that was good stuff, Mike. Jump in at any time, stuff like that. I want to go right to the fact that when people talk about how great Meryl Streep is, they talk about how she can do almost any accent. And what do you think? I think that has to do with her training as a singer. You know, I think she's got a really well-developed ear. And I think that's why she's able to control her voice to sound like other things. Because in a sense, I think it's all a kind of singing for her.
Let me reinforce that really good point you're making. Over the years, when I've interviewed various opera singers, and we talk about their training. And these are people who just do straight opera, you know, and don't necessarily, you know, slide into acting per se. We talk a lot about that because I'm thinking about, you know, like American-born singers who are learning the standard repertory. And, you know, they're singing an Italian opera one week and then a French and then a Russian and so on. How they don't necessarily speak the language, but they learn it phonetically. And we've talked about that in terms of the rehearsal process. And goodness knows, they deserve so much credit for the hours and hours they spend to learn a role. But if you were to try to have a conversation with them in Russian, they might be as halting as anyone else. But when you have the Russian opera and you know your lines there, Marie, you're absolutely right. I think it's the musical training as much as the theater training, and certainly theater actors do the same thing. And there are diction coaches who make their living at this, right? Like you will now have a Southern accent or a New England accent or a French accent, whatever, fill in the blank there. But it's hard to pinpoint it to any one thing, but I think you're right. I think your own musical training has a lot to do with it, because whatever one thinks of her as an actor, and of course you and I obviously love her as an actor, but even for those who are detractors, they'd have to acknowledge that very few actors have her ability to take on an accent and do it convincingly, not just for me as a layman, but where people who actually are of that ethnicity could say, yeah, that's pretty good. That sounds like she's French or Polish or what have you. So back to you.
Now, we like to talk on this show about how we discovered, you know, whoever it is we're discussing. And there's so many movies that she is involved with that we're really going to have to decide what not to talk about because there's just so much there. But the first thing I ever saw her in was a TV miniseries called Holocaust in 1978, where she played the Aryan wife of a Jewish man who was, you know, taken to the concentration camps, et cetera, in the movie or the miniseries sort of evolved from there. And I remember she stood out, you know, amongst all the other people in it. I remember thinking, who is this? And of course, she then went on to make The Deer Hunter that same year. That must have been a great year. And then Kramer versus Kramer the following year. And then things just sort of took off from there. But I'm guessing, Mike, that you are someone who knows her more from The Deer Hunter. So I want to give you the chance to talk about that movie in particular.
Well, you know what? She won an Emmy Award for Holocaust, which I'd seen her in, actually. So I like you, Marie, I noticed her there. I think I remember her from Julia, but honestly, do I trust my memory? In retrospect, I remember her from Julia. But as I was watching, and I think of other performances, obviously, and the biographical figures that you know, it's based on. So it was really a small role. So it's just a technicality. That was her first movie. Deer Hunter in 1978, she was nominated for an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress. I definitely knew her from that. So honestly, I think, Maria, I agree with you that for me, Holocaust, which I saw in 78, yes, and she got the Emmy, but that same year, Deer Hunter. And I'm a movie guy. I want the big screen, right? Nothing against the small screen, but I want the big screen. And even though I had mixed feelings about Deer Hunter as a film, visually, as much as anything, she has a striking appearance on screen. This has nothing to do with talent per se. This is the physical presence of the actor. It's not just saying she's beautiful, but there's something striking about her, I think. You know, really, like some actors hold the frame, that expression, hold the frame. She holds the frame. I mean, when she's on screen, just looking off to the side, you know, looking disconsolate, you know, you feel that. But here's the miracle year, really. I mean, Deer Hunter qualifies, but slide into 1979. In Kramer versus Kramer, she wins the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress. She had very mixed feelings about the role because it's very much a movie on Dustin Hoffman's side. It's a divorcing couple. And I actually interviewed Hoffman when he was doing that film. And the film is very much from his perspective, his side. She's presented sort of as the villain, really. Like anytime you have a marital split, a divorce like that, are you taking sides? Well, the film itself takes sides. And she had reservations about that. And it was not an easy film to work on. But you know what? She got the Oscar. She's quite good in it. But 1979, a miracle year for her. That same year, she appears in Woody Allen's Manhattan, okay? And, you know, and again, these are supporting roles, but among all the supporting players, she gets attention. And here's one of local note, and this is a film I was writing about when it came out. She made a film in Baltimore that same year, 1979, The Seduction of Joe Tynan with Alan Alda. Originally, the title of the film when it was shooting here was The Senator. We wanted to keep that as the title because we wanted The Senator to play at the Senator movie theater in Baltimore, have its big premiere there. They changed the title to a not so great title. It's not that hot a film, but on a provincial note, it's very much made in Baltimore. And she was here working. In fact, a friend of mine living in a city neighborhood rented out his house to that film crew. And he could boast that Meryl Streep was in his bedroom, you know, which she was. They were shooting bedroom scenes there at his house. He wasn't too crazy about having a film crew take over the house, but, you know, Meryl Streep was there. But anyway, her first leading role, let's cut to the chase on this. I mean, she's getting a lot of attention and Oscar notice and all. The French Lieutenant's Woman in 1981 was her first leading role. So she's getting into mainstream, when I say mainstream film, I mean as in leading roles in mainstream films. And now I'm going to turn it back to you because if that was the really formative period, let's say 1978, 79, into the early 80s, the real breakthrough, the terrific breakthrough, of course, was Sophie's Choice in 1982. She wins the Academy Award for Best Actress. And talk about an ability to do accents. So if you want to do her accent as you talk about this, go right ahead.
I don't quite have that kind of talent. I just want to point out for people listening that, you know, she makes Julia in 1977, small role. And it's 2 years later with Kramer versus Kramer that she, you know, wins an Academy Award. This doesn't happen to people. Also, you know, she rewrote her courtroom scene in Kramer versus Kramer. Nobody lets you do that either 2 years into your career. I mean, she really has been very lucky in a lot of ways that she had opportunities, she took them, she made the most of them, but somehow she was able to make things happen. So Sophie's Choice, I think, is probably the movie she's best known for. Just the term Sophie's Choice is now actually an understood idea because of that movie. And she is, of course, fantastic in it. I use that in a course I teach, Women in Film, where we talk about, you know, roles that women have played that have been, you know, important for one reason or another, whether it's Academy Award winning or it says something about the lives of women. And then, of course, she does Silkwood the next year in 83 and Out of Africa in 85. And then, you know, we come into this sort of weird area in the 90s where I don't think she gets what I would consider great roles. I mean, she does Postcards from the Edge in 1990. She does Defending Your Life in 91, which Helen Mitchell and I use in Film and Philosophy. And she does The River Wild in 94, which is, I just watched, hadn't seen it before. She's always the best thing in the movie. You know, you can't not watch her. The fact that she's, you know, a river raft guide is completely believable because it's Meryl Streep. I mean, is there nothing this woman can't do? But then in the 2000s, she comes back with a vengeance and does some great stuff. But before I get into that, you look like you had something to say that I might have glossed over too quickly with that zoom over the 90s.
I always look like I have something more to say. And unless somebody tries to stop me, I'll say it. You're making good observations about her. After that Academy Award for Sophie's Choice, and it's a fabulous performance, you're absolutely right. And how few actors actually enter pop culture that way. By that, I mean that even if people haven't read the source novel, or even if they haven't seen the film, they basically know what Sophie's Choice is about, right? They know that heartbreaking thing where a mother has to choose between children. And they also know, even if they don't know her career as well as others might, you know, that she's got that incredible ability with accents. I mean, when she does the Polish accent, I mean, I just believe I'm watching this Polish woman. You know, I don't think like here's an actor hitting the marks. So I don't agree with Catherine Hepburn on that one. But Marie, you make a point I want to elaborate on. That's why I look so anxious to talk. Even great actors have their ups and downs creatively, you know, also commercially. So with Meryl Streep, I want to hit on a few titles along the way here. Bear in mind, in the 1980s and 1990s, she's making a film a year. I mean, at least, right? It's just, she's really turning them out. You know, some better than others, but these are major releases in terms of Hollywood release schedules. What do I want to highlight? Well, Silkwood, as you mentioned, for sure, in 1983. I want to linger for a moment on Out of Africa in 1985. It won the Academy Award for Best Picture, after all. She received yet another Oscar nomination for her role. She plays the Danish writer, Clarence Blixen. So there she gets a chance to, you know, try on another accent, if you will. Also playing opposite Robert Redford. I mean, you know, her skills in romantic dramas. It's a commercial and critical hit. That's the important thing. It's one of her big films in terms of box office, okay? And in that respect, I want to slide into the late 80s, into the early 90s. Here's why, because most of her early films are serious dramas. Well, like I said at the outset of our program, if you've done something as grueling as Sophie's Choice, would you want to do that every time out of the gate? Okay, which child do I pick this time? You know, it's like really, really grueling. And because she had that early training in theater and in music and a lot of versatility in her stage roles, what happens in the late 80s is she starts to think about and starts taking some lighter roles, still some heavy dramas, but some lighter roles. The Signal film here is not a particularly good film, but it's important in terms of the filmography. She-Devil from 1989. I'm not recommending you watch it. I'm just saying that's a film where she plays a glamorous writer. It's kind of silly, fluffy comedy. It doesn't really work for various reasons, but you know what? She lightens up. That's the point I'm making. She takes on a deliberately kind of silly role. And then as you look at the 90s, she kind of alternates, you know, silly roles like Death Becomes Her with more serious roles. And the other film I'd want to highlight from the 1990s, through the mid-90s at least, is one of her biggest hits. That's Bridges of Madison County, you know, a Clint Eastwood film, obviously. And again, I'm not its biggest fan, but I do respect it because it does extremely well what it's doing. And when you think about the source material, that kind of romantic drama, she's really effective in it, really good. And the point I'm making at the moment is essentially a box office point, because some of her films hit more than others. But when you look at Out of Africa and you look at Bridges of Madison County and a few others, these are really solid box office hits. So what I mean by that in particular is it doesn't have to be like a groupie who watches everything she ever makes and just, you know, the fan club, if you will. But people who just go to the movies a few times a year, they would know and respect her from films like that.
You make a good point, and thank you for mentioning Out of Africa, because I have it on my list, but somehow forgot to mention it. I thought she was absolutely great in The Devil Wears Prada from 2006, which is a tough role because she has to play the overbearing magazine editor, but she does it with such panache, you know, sweeps in, dumps her coat and her purse on her hapless assistant played by Anne Hathaway. And with this imperious, that's all, so perfectly condescending. I like how she can almost make fun of herself. I like her better in those roles than I do when she tries to use her singing talent, which I can't blame her for trying, but she sings in Silkwood and in Heartburn and in Postcards from the Edge, and of course in Mamma Mia. And I, except for the Mamma Mia movies, which are, you know, everybody seems to love those, I think those are all a miss in terms of the singing. It just doesn't work for me. How about you?
Well, you know what? I agree with you, basically. One of my favorite Meryl Streep movies is Devil Wears Prada, because mm-hmm. she's playing it light, it's comic. But, you know, the thing about playing comedy is you have to play it straight, right? Like you know, we may laugh at the character, sort of as an Antor Wintour fashion editor type character. We can laugh at her, but she wouldn't laugh at herself. You know, she's serious about all this. And Meryl Streep is letter perfect in that role. And I just love her all the way through that film. So I agree with you on that. And her scenes with Anne Hathaway, really great dynamic between the overbearing editor and the more timid assistant. But I agree with you that as you get into the 90s and into the first decade of our century, she has enough roles where it's not only lighter comic material, but she sings. And for me, it's like, I don't blame her for doing it. And so the movies are enjoyable to varying degrees, but you're right. I don't think it's her strong suit. Look at that very period you're talking about. The same year she does Devil Wears Prada, which is a non-singing thing. She's in Robert Altman's final film, Prairie Home Companion, which is full of actors. And Altman loved to have actors sing and play instruments, even if they didn't in real life, you know, but he loved, you know, Nashville, think about things like that. He loved to have the cast singing. So it's a good role for her in that respect. Mamma Mia, you know, I've seen it on stage many times. I've seen the movie and its sequel and so on. It's kind of irresistible commercial material. I mean, it's fun to watch, but, you know, push come to shove, is this her best work? No, but she's enjoying herself. And, you know, she's a passably good singer. I mean, I don't mean that as a backhanded compliment. She's better than I am, that's for sure. You know, and so she's really quite capable there. But you know what? That's actually where I think there's a bit of a kind of self-consciousness, a bit of like studious effort. You know, and of course, Ricky and the Flash is a movie, you know, a little further along where, you know, she, you know, is in a rock band. So she keeps returning to that. But Maria, I agree with you. Basically, there are a lot of credits in this period. And even though we're mentioning some of the musical ones now and lighter comic ones, I mean, some like Devil Wears Prada are among her best comic performances. The musical ones, Maria, like you, I mean, let's talk about this a little bit more, because for some reason, I'm enjoying them enough as I'm watching them, but I don't feel the urge like to watch some of those movies again.
I feel like the Mamma Mia in particular is one of those movies that it's like a chick flick. You go with all of your girlfriends, and Meryl Streep being in it is just, you know, because you would think this is just her being one of the girls. And she hits this note also in Big Little Lies, which is a HBO show based on a best-selling book. She plays the horrible mother. Again, not a sympathetic role, but she is just note perfect. She plays Aunt March in Little Women in 2019. Again, great chick flick, wonderful casting, and throwing, you know, Meryl Streep in there as Aunt March is just perfect. So I think she's most successful when she hits those notes. She also, I want to mention 2008 Doubt, because I rewatched it the other day and was just so, again, impressed with her, because she does have, you know, a brand new accent for that, where she plays this nun who, you know, from New York someplace, she's got that attitude and the accent down, and you just don't see her in your mind until you see the movie as being able to embody this sort of tough woman nun. Great role for her. I absolutely loved her as Julia Child in Julie and Julia in 2009. I think that's one of my favorite roles for her of all time. She's great when she does real life people. The Iron Lady in 2011, The Post in 2017. What do you think of those roles, Mike, as we're coming into our last 5 minutes? What do we want to highlight from her career, either that I've mentioned or that I haven't mentioned?
No, in fact, you did a great job of mentioning some of her best films from the last decade or so. The two I would single out, you've mentioned. In Iron Lady, she won an Academy Award for playing Margaret Thatcher. I mean, it's a letter perfect performance. She is Margaret Thatcher there. And Marie, I'm doubling back on the point you just made. It's not just her ability to give us accents, but accents belonging to real, as in really famous people. And so she does it with Margaret Thatcher. Also in The Post in 2017, the Spielberg film, she's playing the publisher, the Washington Post, the publisher, Katharine Graham. And having met Katharine Graham and then having watched the movie, I can tell you, I thought like I was watching Katharine Graham. I mean, really impressive work there. So she does her research. She does her homework, not just on the accents, but really the look and just immersing herself in those characters. Also that, you know, but she does still periodically does some of the musical stuff like the Florence Foster Jenkins that I mentioned earlier. That's from 2016, where she's playing a real life socialite who aspires to be an opera singer who's terrible. There she's doing deliberately bad singing, which is a skill in itself, you know, and she's amusing in that. But if we were to list some of the other credits in the past decade, some of them are light and fluffy comedy, some are musical or musical elements like Mamma Mia. But the best ones, and this is directly to your question, Marie, would be, I would say, The Iron Lady from 2011 and The Post from 2017. She's got it. I mean, she still delivers.
Now, I want to mention a quote that she said about acting because, you know, we've talked so much about what a great actor she is, but, you know, she's also, we haven't had time to mention everybody she has worked with, but she certainly has worked with, I would say, almost everybody I could think of that's a major. But here's what she said about acting. She says, "This is a lesson I learned in drama school. The teacher asks, how do you be the queen? And everybody says, oh, it's about posture and authority. And they said, no. It's about how the air in the room shifts when you walk in, and that's everyone else's work. But I would venture to say you could probably get people to stand up and pay attention if you happen to be Meryl Streep in the first place," which, you know, most of us don't have that advantage. But that does bring us to the end of our show. Don't forget to check out our other episodes at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. And you can also find us on Spotify under Dragon Digital Radio. So don't forget to check out those episodes, and we will see you at the movies.
See you there.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.